Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the collegiate, fraternal, supercilious world of Lieutenant Columbo. From a sealed panic room in Chicago, I'm Mac, and joining me as always from a rebar-spiked compound in the burned-out husk of Seattle, it's Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
Hey, how you doing? How are you holding up under lockdown?
I'm still here. I have less of a beard than I did the last time we did this.
All right. I have a little more of a beard. I can't really grow a proper beard. This is a shame of mine, as you know.
No, okay. Listen, there's
the
things you can grow
magic.
are still a real beard. You may not have a beard that is like the Brian Blessed, but not everybody.
That's what I want, though.
Yeah,
that's my beard goal, is a giant, messy, terrible beard. When people look at me, I want them to be like, "What's his problem?" I want to look like Oscar Isaac in Ex Machina.
Oh,
that's what I want.
Okay, I thought for a moment you were going to say Oscar Isaac in Dune because he's got a beard in Dune.
That's true.
But I just
want to look like Oscar Isaac. Like,
there it
isn't
is.
That just what everyone wants, really, when you get down to it?
A lot of us, yeah.
Yeah. either I want to be him or I want to sleep with him. I can't figure out which.
It can be both. Yeah.
This week we're taking a look at Season 10, Episode 1, Columbo Goes to College. This episode stars Stephen Caffrey and Gary Hershberger as frat brothers who kill their criminology professor before he can expose them for cheating.
Hershberger.
Caffrey, a working actor to this day, appeared as Arnie in the Yada Yada episode of Seinfeld and as a doctor in the Diagnosis Murder TV pilot, Diagnosis Murder, Diagnosis of Murder. Which is the real name of the pilot of Diagnosis Murder.
Jesus.
Gary Hershberger, meanwhile, appeared as coke-dealing high schooler Mike Nelson on Twin Peaks, as well as some other things. I got bored and I didn't want to do any more research on IMDb. Appearing in this episode as one of the students is Carl Wiedergott. Wiedergott's name might be instantly recognizable, but he appeared in 253 episodes of The Simpsons from 1998 to 2010. I think about half of that was when the show was still watchable. He played characters such as Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, and additional voices. That's the nerdy student.
Okay, I was going to say, because when I took notes, I went, he kind of gives me like Time Chasers protagonist vibes, which
I think that's unfair to the protagonist of Time Chasers, who is a little beefier than this guy. But yes, I understand.
I just meant like level of nerddom at play.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
However, by far the most important credit of this episode is the final appearance on Columbo of Mr. Robert Culp.
Hell yeah.
This is Culp's fourth appearance on the show and marks the only episode that he appeared in where he did not play the killer. This is including the pilot episode of Mrs. Columbo, starring Star Trek Voyager Captain Kate Mulgrew. And if you'd like to hear our opinions on that, you can check out our bonus episode from last year.
Yep.
Robert Culp left an indelible mark on Columbo, and his legacy is forever emblazoned in our hearts. Now, I know, Ben, you know how much I love Robert Culp, and I know how much you love Robert Culp.
I
love Robert Culp. I'm so glad he's back.
I know. I cannot tell you what a thrill it was to see the credits rolling by and see his name pop up, because I had forgotten that we had one more. And I was so excited to see that Culp was around, even if it was just in a supporting role, and he did not disappoint.
They very clearly had Robert Culp for a day.
Mm-hmm.
He could do a day scene, he could do a night scene, and that's it. So they shot him at the they shot him at the mansion, and then he was out.
Yeah, they were like, "Hey, can you bring a tuxedo and another suit?" And he's like, "I got it."
Yeah. Oh, I guess he was at he did the outdoor thing for the burger thing, but that was all one day.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
I'm
100% that was only one day.
Oh, I'm sure that was all just in the one day. But did you notice I poked at the writer Jeffrey Bloom, and he's written a myriad of things. But
he wrote three. But he has written three Columbos, one still to come.
Yep. Well, the other one we've seen, and that's Agenda for Murder, right?
That's right, yeah. Which I will bring up in a little bit because it will be relevant actually to this episode.
Great.
So, as I said in the beginning, the basic premise of this episode is that we have these two frat boys who may or may not be in love. It's unclear.
It's,
they have, I would say,
according to friends of mine, a close
relationship.
That's a pretty safe bet, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely sleep in their room with their beds in a V formation so that their heads are basically adjacent to each other with like a very small end table in between them.
I did note what an interesting layout that was of their room in the frat house. Yeah.
They spend a lot of time with their heads very close together. And hey, listen. You know, people are friends in different ways, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But also, these guys are very clearly into each other. I just get that. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah.
I don't know, Ben.
No. I'm with you there. I definitely had those moments of like, oh, this is like I had a pause because I was like, oh, this feels way more real than they know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's the subtext of these both of these guys being like not wanting to disappoint their fathers and then like, you know, all this expectation on top of them. So, you know, there's it's an undercurrent, but
and definitely
not explicitly explored.
Right. I mean, it's not explicit, but there's enough sort of context clues that you look at it and go, I bet most people in the early 90s completely missed that.
Yeah.
But there are also other, I mean, there are other things that are less subtle, which is, you know, I mean, how grabby they are with each other. I mean, not that they grab each other's asses, but just like you say, they're conspicuously close, but then there's just little things like I had the episode on again, while I was, setting up, for recording. Mm-hmm. And when Cooper strolls back into the frat house at the beginning of it, you know, one of the other frat members basically gives him a heads up about the party that we see later in the episode. And Coop shoots back, and I had to write this down because I couldn't believe it. It was, give a guy a chance to wax his legs, will ya?
Hey.
And I was like, yeah, but would you? I mean, I'm sure... Again, I'm sure that it is probably meant to be a sort of
I think it's more of like a you know, hey, I'm not a lady. Ha 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 ha. Wouldn't it be funny if I whacked my legs?
Yeah, and then it goes to him being uncomfortably close with his best bud /
or comfortably
roommate.
Close.
Yeah.
It really depends on your on your, you know.
Well, okay, you're right. They both look really comfortable with how close they are to each other.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
They seem perfectly fine, and who are we to judge about it? So, so they are both in this criminology class.
Uh-huh.
Did they say, like, I don't recall if they said exactly what sort of class it is.
No, I believe that we are expected to infer the criminology from subject matter.
It's some sort of legal class because we know at least Justin is going to become a lawyer. I think Cooper's goals are basically just to not get kicked off of his daddy's, you know, off of his trust fund.
Yeah, exactly.
But Justin is being pressured by his high-powered but infrequently seen lawyer father.
Right, who is like a defense attorney, I think.
Robert Culp.
Yep.
We later learn. Mm-hmm. So their pressure is on for both of them to do well in this class. And Justin steals a...
He steals
a copy of the exam, yes. And then they both ace the exam, which is apparently suspicious enough that Professor Rusk immediately knows that they did it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the part that I wasn't entirely clear on. I watched it a couple times, and it's still in that, like, because he's like, you took the test, and I mean stole. Like I don't know if that's supposed to just be kind of a fun, entirely, you know, entire play on words, or if it is literally the, you took the test, and also I figured out that you clearly stole, you know, the exam, you know, like, key card. I kind of got the impression that it was just like, I figured out that you guys stole a copy of the fucking thing. And
I think he just, I don't know.
I don't think they'd taken it.
It's any more than like, hey, you guys were obviously cheating. I can tell because of the way that you finished this quiz. And maybe that they answered questions in such a specific way. You know, it's unclear because we don't know the context of the text. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. But anyway, he knows. And he says, don't toy with me, Justin, not you of all people, when he's confronting them, which I just found very funny and weird.
it's so weird for him to be like, not you of all people. And it's like, well, but this Justin, is like the
cruelest cut of all, Justin.
I know. We come to find out like later that he is just the fucking gossip monger on campus.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, it is a weird thing. And I suspect that that is just meant to be kind of the indicator of like, because Justin's dad is like legal counsel for the school and is also involved in fundraising and all of this other stuff. I mean, it's very clear that these two guys, at least Justin and probably Cooper, you know, have wealthy, powerful dads who can exert influence on professors at the school.
Yeah.
Which is why it's a little weird. I mean, overbearing father, I guess. I get it. But it is a little weird that they go from, we need to wheel and deal with this guy so that we aren't thrown out on the street, to, well, we just got to kill him.
Yeah. I feel like These guys skipped blackmail, went straight to murder. Like, they already know that this incriminating stuff about him stepping out on his wife.
Right.
Seems like they skipped a crucial step, which is, blackmail.
Yeah, try the blackmail first. You don't go straight to murder. Right.
Come on.
Yeah. You go for the lesser crime and work your way up. Exactly. Yeah. Again, we are not pro-murder. We are anti-murder here. But, no.
But we're but also... I would say that we're blackmail neutral.
In fairness, I was going to say, I mean, here at Columboys, we are all about, you know, setting yourself reasonable goals and achieving them and then setting the bar a little higher and just kind of working your way up.
Absolutely. Listen, believe in yourself. You can blackmail someone.
Yeah.
I should put a disclaimer in here.
Right.
Hold on.
It's not a good idea.
The Columboys are not responsible for any action taken due to the legal response provided in this episode. Neither of the Columboys are lawyers.
That's right. Neither one of us.
Please do not listen to Mac. He is a fucking idiot. So he's going to expose them. They've got like 24 hours to murder him. And for some reason, he hasn't told anyone about it.
Right. He's like, I haven't decided yet. And it's like, don't give them the heads up then. But it's also like he tells them, and then he storms out because he's got somewhere to be. And then they fucking follow him in, I know we didn't talk about it in that opening scene, but like Cooper drives like the worst kind of truck imaginable, which is to say,
it's the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so it's 90s. And to my mind, it looks like one of the old small Toyota or Mitsubishi pickup trucks, the sort that can't be imported into the States anymore. That's a whole other weird, stupid thing.
It looks like if the opening to Saved by the Bell was a truck. Like, it's all white. Yeah. It's got these like pink, hot pink squiggles on it.
Yeah, and those are slapped on, and they're all over the places where you would normally get the car logo. But here's the kicker for me that makes it like the shitty thing. It's not like the garish 90s trend thing as much. This is a very small pickup truck that has humongous fucking wheels on it, and then the big like rack with the lights on it. And I get that that's probably
it's also
like,
got that dumb performance hood on it too.
Yeah,
where like that sort of 90s trend of putting like a million holes in the front for not for airflow or any particular reason, just kind of to
just
look cool.
Yeah, because you think it looks cool. Yeah. Or because you just saw Mad Max for the first time in your teen years and got some dumb ideas.
Oh, yeah. If you painted this thing all black and then, like, you know, put a guy in a hockey mask up on top of it, like, I'd be way into it. Yeah, Cowcatcher.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, that was my friend's joke always was, like, you know, the first thing he's going to do, you know, in a sort of, you know, like, the moment that, like, World War III breaks out or whatever is spray paint his car flat black and stick a cowcatcher on the front, because that's apparently all you have to do to be in, you know, the Mad Max universe.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm planning to do. My car is approximately 6 feet long, but, you know, it's got a little bit of horsepower to it, so.
Yeah, I'm sure that cowcatcher wouldn't tip your car forward in a dangerous and unsafe fashion.
My car is the exact opposite of Cooper's Cooper's truck, pretty much. Or is it Cooper's truck? So they, because it seems like Justin is the one that
hops in it and drives away.
Driving it.
Yeah, they...
And later,
this lends credence
to
your theory that they are secretly a couple, because we first see this truck when Cooper is driving back to the frat house in it, nobody with him, and then he goes into the frat house and encounters people, et cetera, et cetera. And there's actually an important thing when he goes upstairs, and that is there is a tiny RC
Elf.
Pickup truck.
There's a tiny RC pickup truck.
That has a video camera in the back of it and a little sticky note. And so he follows that because it basically drives back to their room. And Justin is controlling it with a remote control. And because it has this broadcast camera on the back, he's watching it on the television. While basically he's watching Cooper follow it on the TV while he's driving it back to the room. And that turns out to actually be some foreshadowing as to, their method.
So it's clear that Justin is a bit of a tinkerer or a whiz kid. So they create...
keep telling us that these guys are the sharpest tacks.
They're both very smart. Robert Culp says that his son could have easily gotten into Harvard, but he had to pay... Why is he in California? If he got into Harvard Law School, what is he doing in California?
Right. It's unclear. Well, I mean, it's law school.
I guess maybe
he's got to do his undergrad.
I guess maybe he's doing pre-law.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, he's at least doing his undergrad, and then he's probably rolling up to Harvard for law.
I don't know. I have two parents who are lawyers. I have no idea how anything works.
I don't remember how pre-law works, but it's a good point. I honestly don't. I just don't.
I
don't
think
remember.
It's just you get a pre. I think it's a degree that you get before you go to law school, if memory serves. Anyway, please write in and give us corrections. We love them. they are attending this class. Professor Rusk, D.E. Rusk. Mm-hmm. By the way, just a side note. D.E. is a if your initials are D.E., don't go by D.E. That's terrible. It sounds bad.
It's a new one to me, I have to admit.
Like DB or something like that. But like DE, there's like the EE it's not great.
DE. I mean, it's just,
Listen, you're no EE Cummings, DE Rusk. So.
Definitely not.
But so he has invited as a guest lecturer someone from the police department, and the police department basically just threw Columbo at him, like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, here you go. Here's a guy we can afford to give you.
Please take this guy off our hands for a while. He is very exhausting.
He loves to talk.
Yeah, he's really Jessica Fletchering it in this episode, because he is going, like, this is an episode where Columbo goes somewhere and a murder happens. That's unrelated to him, but he's there. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think this might be the only instance in the entire show where Columbo is present in the same room with the person actively doing the murder.
Right.
Because he is on stage, or on whatever you call it. He's down at the dais giving a little talk about what it's like to be a policeman. And meanwhile, the professor has left early to go meet with... the dad, I think, is the thing, right?
So what happens is, like we get a lot of shots basically establishing that these two have a lot of connections and do a lot of wheeling and dealing. Like, they park their pickup truck in the faculty parking lot because they bribe the security guard who operates the gate.
Tickets.
Right, with Lakers tickets. So basically what happens is before class, Justin... saunters into Rusk's office and does the whole sort of hangdog, like, I told my dad what I did. We had a long talk about it. He wants to talk to you. And Rusk is like, great, have him call me. And Justin is like, no, you got to meet him in person.
You got to go have dinner with him.
He's going to be over here having dinner. It's you know, I know it's during, you know, the lecture, but you can just go over and then you can come back before the end of it, blah, blah, blah. Justin leaves for Washington in the morning. You've got to do it tonight.
Yeah. Justin goes and makes an, a dinner appointment at a local restaurant, which I don't know.
Oh, he
didn't, I don't know why
actually.
He did that.
He lied about it. Yeah.
No, I mean, he did make an appointment because there was like someone called to this restaurant and made an appointment. And then,
the maitre d' in that scene, the maitre d' tells Columbo that Rusk called to have the maitre d' tell Mr. Rowe that he was going to be late.
We didn't
have a Mr. Rowe here tonight. You can see our reservations. There's nobody here by that name.
Yeah.
And that's
correct.
Right. And that was that little, but basically, so he just straight up lied to him because he knew he knew that Rusk was going to die before he got in his car.
Interesting little note there. Since we're far afield, but, the waiter in this episode who plays a very snooty waiter who is irritated by Columbo.
Yeah. I made notes about how good
as the very snooty waiter who is irritated about dealing with Columbo in the RIP Mrs. Columbo episode, when he goes to meet the doctor in San Francisco, and there's a waiter there.
Yes.
That waiter has apparently moved down to LA and is now working at that restaurant.
I mean, you know, snooty waiters are in strong demand, I guess, in that kind of restaurant.
If you look at this guy's IMDb page, the picture is of him as a waiter.
As a waiter,
so,
yeah.
You know, that was his deal.
Listen, man, if you're good at it, you know.
If you can make money at doing something in Hollywood, then do it. Yeah,
fuck
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like the guy in that episode who played the priest at the magician funeral, who played a priest in literally everything else.
Right.
God. You know, if you can find a thing
funeral.
To do.
Thank you.
Just get into it. But yeah, so he is going out to his car and they have placed a gun with a camera that has a little reticle on it. Mm-hmm. And when the guy leans down to put his key in the car, they click the thing and shoot him in the head.
Yeah, they basically click the remote unlock on the car door, but they've hooked it up to a pistol. Oh, a pistol, by the way, that they stole from Joe, the security guard.
Security guard.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they used his pistol.
They stole his keys.
Yep.
When they were giving him Lakers tickets.
Uh-huh.
Broke into his house, stole the gun, because they know that his brother...
Yeah, they copied his key, I think. Is
they
what
copied
they did.
His key in the the key lab of the university.
Right. I mean, these fucking guys, really, it's so...
It's an incredibly elaborate crime for how, like...
Yeah, which
I
think is, you know, meant to establish, like, oh, they're very clever. It's just that every time you see them, like, trying to string Columbo along, they are being such, like, doofuses. Like, they're... Yeah. And the other thing that, like, I took a note about, because I think... I want to say the game was Army of Two way back in the day.
Sure. You're talking about fist bumps?
Yes. I'm talking about the fact that it's like, you know, guys who are basically like the whole thing is like you are these like ultra like murderer killers, like private military company. And the fact that they fist bump after killing someone and these guys fist bump after they kill Rusk.
They do give a little bump because they're sitting in class listening to Columbo talk and they activate the alarm on the truck, which pulls the trigger and shoots them.
Right.
Shoots Rust.
Yeah, which so works as like the remote trigger. Yeah, but it's also that like Cooper fucking pulls out this really slick little leather square case and he opens it up and slips out this
tiny
very
TV.
Tiny tube television. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I actually really love those old like handheld televisions. I used to have one, and they're so great.
I'm a sucker for that kind of weird archaic technology, and I was just admiring like what a fancy version of one they put in his hands to illustrate just sort of how affluent and entitled these two are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like there's a good tech episode, and it's like the tech in it is not crazy unrealistic the way that it is in some episodes that involve tech. Like this, everything that happens is somewhat reasonable. There's a little bit later where the murder ends up on the news because someone who was trying to record something off their satellite TV dish picked up the broadcast of the murder, and so they got a VHS copy of the murder as it's happening.
Now,
by the way, a really good VHS copy. Like, I don't know if they have like SVHS or if they're recording to like a broadcast standard. It's
a very
nice copy.
Guy had a satellite, so no. The thing that I want to say about this is that you gotta take a pause and moment. Remember, this is early 90s. So when the lady says this guy has a satellite, what she means is like those giant fucking honkers
that people
used to actually get installed in their yard. Because I definitely knew somebody who had
90s
one of those.
90s kids remember.
But like, instead of like a direct TV thing. And they were...
Yeah. It was like they would be the size of a kiddie pool or larger.
Mm-hmm.
These giant things that would sit in people's yards, and like basically you would use them to contact other planets. Like they're insanely huge and very unnecessary, but at the time it was cutting edge technology.
Yeah, it was cutting edge, and it allowed you to get access to all of these channels that you normally... Yeah, it was a whole thing until like DirecTV had, you know, like smaller satellite dishes and a more effective kind of network of that stuff. But so the idea is that this guy has such a big fucking receiver and was in close enough proximity that it just picked up, the weak broadcast from this one camera, which is, I think that's that's the part it's not that it can't happen. It's just that, like, generally speaking, if you're talking about, like, a broadcast television, like over the air broadcast, that signal's pretty strong.
Right. And also wouldn't go to a satellite dish.
No.
Because that's not what satellite dishes are specifically for, communicating with satellites, not for just any signal that's in the air.
Yeah. So that satellite dish technically wouldn't be the thing catching that. I also could be wrong. Fine. I didn't own one of those. My family never had anything like that. We had like
enough about satellite dish to tell us. This is the one time when I'm not kidding, and I would actually legitimately like to hear a correction. So if you know about satellite technology, please write in.
I can't tell you if like those old big satellites also were set up to just do, over the air pickup, because they were just gigantic, pieces of metal.
Yeah. So they shoot this guy in the fucking head, and boy, they show way more of it than I was expecting to necessarily see. There's so much blood.
There's so much blood.
There's a whole lot of red corn syrup.
So much 90s TV blood. All gone every time they replay the security tape. He just snaps his head to the side and crumples.
He grabs his head and falls over.
And it's really kind of beautiful. Like, I know that's because probably the network sensors were like, you cannot show this same guy.
Well, and they didn't have the technology to like CG in a blood spray like landing on the car. So whenever they show it, they can't they didn't put a squib on the side of the guy's head to like blow open onto the car. So he just kind of grabs his head and falls over.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Columbo comes up, so they all come out of the class, and they walk down to the garage together, Cooper and Justin and all of them.
Yeah, and five other people from the class, trying to get the nerdy guy, you've got the
nondescript guy, you've got the woman.
The woman who is friends with the nerdy guy.
They're all going down to the... parking lot, and they run into... I don't know why they're all going to the parking lot.
Well, they're supposedly...
Are they all going to ride with Columbo?
Yeah, see, that's the part I'm unclear about. I don't know if they're going there because they're following Columbo, but ostensibly they are going to their regular after-class hangout, which is to go to the local
Right. Maybe they're all going to pile in. Some are going to go with Columbo. Some will pile in the truck or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, they go down and they find the dead body. And Columbo immediately rushes over, puts his hand
in
and
the
like,
blood. Yep.
And just like wipes it and then like sort of like wiggles it between his fingers. Like, this is very clearly fake blood. It's yeah, good job preserving the crime scene there, Columbo.
Nailed
it. Just like wipe your hand on the blood. Good job.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just had to get right in there.
He had to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then what's his name? Justin goes and runs to the security. Well, he drives, he leaves and drives out.
Yeah. Well, he does the thing that, like, to his credit, it's probably the right call for them, which is he says, I'll go call 911, dashes into the truck, and then dashes drives it outside, and then runs
drives
back
around
in.
The corner. Yeah. Runs back into the front door, which I feel like it's more like, why wouldn't you just run back in the stairs and then up? Like, how is it faster to drive around the building?
But whatever. Columbo, I don't think, assumed that he was going to the security desk to call 911. You know, he just figured he would run to a close payphone or something, you know, like he didn't direct him in that way. But yeah, so Justin like
he runs up to the security cameras to where the Gus, is it Gus?
It's
the security guard?
It's Joe. And I wrote down his brother's name from like when they were
Dominic?
Breaking it. Thank you, Dominic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
but
like.
Yes, he runs in, he tells Joe, Joe runs down there. Mm-hmm.
And Joe, Justin basically says, he says, hey, don't you want to save the security tape? And Joe's like, you do it for me. You know.
And so he presses a button and saves the one angle where you can't see the car.
Right.
Or see the truck.
You can't see the front of the truck. And so you can't, you wouldn't be able to see the, like,
the
smoke or anything from the shot. Yeah. Exactly. Or the, you know, the flare, basically.
So he saves that tape, which, how quickly are the tapes erased in this place? Because the cops are there very soon. How did they not save the other tape?
Yeah, so I think the insinuation, I mean, what the guy explained, I think Joe lays this out for Columbo later, is basically that the tape system, like those tapes are only
an hour. It erases
every
like 2 hours or whatever.
They record an hour and then they proceed to overwrite. Okay. And so you just have to stop it recording to keep it from overwriting what's, you know, what's on the tape for the last hour. And it's, it's like, which I've heard before, that's like a, you know, cost cutting, you know, back when they had to use actual, you know, magnetic tape. But yeah, so that's the idea, is that he only stopped that one and let the others roll so that they would just overwrite stuff. And again, I'm with you. Cops got there fast enough. I don't know why that wouldn't be caught, but it's also not that big a deal. It's not.
No,
there's nothing like super egregious in the structure of the tech or the catch with the tech in this. I feel
I feel generally like this is one of the better episodes as far as like modern Columbo. I actually, honestly, I'm gonna say I think this is probably maybe the best non the best non-Magooan modern Columbo episode so far.
No, that's fair. I was going to say, I mean, honestly,
I think this is actually a pretty decent episode.
It's a really, I think it's a good episode. I think I'm going to nitpick about anything in this episode that isn't clothing, then
we'll get to that party. Don't worry. We'll get to that party.
No, I know. I separated it so that we could do it at the end. If there's anything that I would complain about, it's such a minor nitpick, and it's really just that, you know, at after the catch, it's a little unsatisfying just because of the nature of Justin's rant at Columbo.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I understand what you're saying.
I
feel like
it's totally on the nose. Like, don't mistake me. I think it is absolutely, you know, like nails it on that. It is just one of those things of, as a consumer of television, you know, especially something like a Columbo, where it's like at the end, ostensibly, you do expect to see the thing kind of, you know, somewhat wrapped up and, hopefully, you know, have closure.
I mean, I prefer this 100% to the episodes where Columbo pulls something out of his pocket and says, gotcha. And then that's the end of the episode.
Oh, no,
like that.
Absolutely.
Those episodes are garbage.
Hold on. Mac, I'm not bagging on like the catch at all. Like I enjoyed the hell out of the catch. It is just that like after they fucking cuff Cooper and Justin's like, Justin basically goes on about, you know, like my dad and this and that. And it's like, and that's accurate. That is exactly what I would expect that kind of character to do. It's just the show doesn't do anything to sort of take the teeth out of that, if that makes sense. Like I see that and I think, yeah, this fucking kid's gonna get off because his dad's a defense attorney and you know, and they're hooked in all these powerful people. Like he's probably gonna
do okay.
Right.
So we should let's talk about the catch so that we can just after we've gotten the business out of the way.
Sure. Yeah.
But so Columbo is onto these guys. They're heavily implicating this guy Dominic, who is Joe's brother. Dominic is a recent parolee. He's been in and out of prison his entire life.
Right. We have a lovely scene with him where he's basically just wearing like a denim work shirt that is just open and just fucking drinking
in
his apartment.
Yeah,
I love
he's like legitimately great in this. And like when Columbo pulls up to the house, he's sitting up on the balcony. And Columbo
fucking, like,
says,
smoking and drinking, I think.
Yeah, and Columbo's like, I'm Columbo, I'm from Homicide. And he goes, Homicide? Haven't done one of those in a while. And it's like, that's such a good, like, that's such a good line.
He's so fucking
like,
nonchalant about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not doing that right now, but
he's like, oh, that's kind of not what I'm doing. Yeah.
Yep.
So they've heavily implicated
this guy. They're trying to frame him, and they Columbo has someone call up, classic Columbo move to plant this stuff. He has someone call up, give him the details of Dominic's, quote, car. Yeah. And then the boys go find it. They plant a gun inside of this car. But surprise, surprise, it turns out the car was not Dominic's car.
But was
it was Columbo's wife's car, which... This is the third time Columbo has done basically this exact same thing. And I feel like you need to find a new trick, my guy.
Yeah, like, it's like, oh, this isn't their apartment. This is my apartment. Yeah. Like,
this isn't my apartment. This is my wife's sister's apartment.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, I get it.
Oh, this isn't
Columbo.
My house. I don't live here. This is Sergeant, you know, Doohickey's. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but,
exactly. Yeah.
But that's it. But it's nice that they don't drop that immediately. Like you know that's what's up, but it's not until he basically goes back to teaching the class.
They recreate the entire scene. They have the guys park their truck exactly where it was. Mm-hmm. They put the professor's car exactly where it was. They put a dummy where the professor was standing, and then they have the nerdy guy. They basically do a demonstration of a rig that shoots a gun. They have the nerdy guy detonate it from inside the garage. The parking garage to the classroom.
Right.
To prove that it could be done with it in the distance. And then they go down and actually they've remounted this. I'm very curious what happened in between because...
Right.
So they...
Well, where did they?
In order to shoot him, they had this mount that was built by Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Justin built this mount that shoots a gun and mounted it inside of their truck.
Yeah, it props up the gun. It keeps it stable, and it's hooked into.
It's also got a camera.
Right, it's got the camera in there, and then it's hooked into the receiver that is on the same frequency as basically the car unlock, so that when he unlocks the car
after the murder. Did they leave it in there? Because it's the same. It's like the same. It's not that they have they built another one and they put it in there. It's the same one.
Well, except, so they have one that's up in the classroom.
Classroom.
And then there's already one in the truck, but Columbo doesn't point that out until after he's, you know, basically kind of laid out the stuff and made Justin press the unlock button to fire a bullet at the dummy and blow the dummy's brains out, which is like really kind of weirdly gruesome, especially considering that there are like at least five students in that class who were fucking traumatized by seeing the corpse of their professor laying by his car. And you just put a dummy dressed as their professor in front of his car and blew its head off in front of them. That's fucked up.
Which is also pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
They didn't know for sure that it would not, you know, misfire and
What if somebody was standing in front of the truck? Like, that's
what if he accidentally tapped the you know, the alarm button, which as a person who has a truck fob with alarm buttons on it, you do that from time to time.
You'll
just
and then
lean
you
on
panic.
The panic button and your car starts beeping for no reason.
Yeah, so you hit the panic button and it causes panic. That's what happens.
Yeah. And my car doesn't shoot any bullets yet. Not till I put that cow catcher on.
That's not how cow catchers work, but okay.
Well, it's going to be part of the installation process. It's also the mounted miniguns.
All right, fair.
So they do this, and I you know what? Give Justin credit because he commits to the lie.
Yeah.
So they open the truck. They like expose this contraption, which is still in there for some inexplicable reason and still has all the stuff and is still working. They expose that, and Justin is like, so Dominic put all of this in the truck in order to frame us? And
nobody standing in front of you buys this for a second, but I applaud your efforts to double down on your stupidity.
Listen, if you get caught in a lie, the first thing you do is you try to just barrel through, just like,
tell a bigger one. That'll get you out of it.
Definitely this two-bit criminal broke into my car, put a gun in there, which which incriminates him.
Right.
Then later took it out, put it in his car to incriminate himself.
Yeah.
Yep.
That all checks out. And it's at that point that Columbo drops the like, well, nobody knew this car. Let's bring this car out. Nobody knew that this car, like, basically you're the only ones who knew the license plate on this car.
Exactly.
Because you were listening to me on the, you know, and you're the ones who put the gun there. So thanks, dummies. Yeah. No, it's great. I really do enjoy it. And I got to give credit to the actor who plays Justin because he is really sublime
really
as that like smug, like, I think I'm smarter than everybody else around me, like early 20s kind of rich kid in college. Like that's really, that was, you want to talk about like seeing a thing and being like, oh my God, I know that dude.
Like, he does a pretty good Columbo impression at one point.
Yeah, surprising.
Admittedly.
Yeah.
It's a decent Columbo impression. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, I think, where Columbo turns the corner on these guys because he's already kind of
suspecting
them.
The two biggest markers for me were while he's beating feet initially and he goes and goes to the restaurant and finds out that he was meeting a Mr. Rowe, then when he goes back to meet the students at at the bar that they're hanging out in, someone refers to Justin as Mr. Rowe, and that's where he puts together, like,
it's his
last name.
In somehow. Yeah.
So he is, you know, he is probably the one who killed the, you know, he doesn't explicitly say. And then it's later when they are leading him around, and he is on the phone to check out something, which is specifically.
They've gone to a bar. Mm-hmm. The bar is where Rusk was meeting with the wife of the coach for the college team.
June Clark.
The coach was away in Seattle, Washington, which means that they must have been playing the Huskies. So, but they're meeting up. They had a tryst a while ago, but it ended.
Ended months ago, is what she said.
Rusk was trying to like reignite the flame, but she wasn't into it. And so they use this information to kind of like lay the blame at her a little bit for a little while, kind of just to throw Columbo off.
They think they're having this blast of like leading Columbo around on this wild goose chase, and then they're gonna like dump him on Justin's dad's lap, who is just gonna eat him for breakfast. And, you know, like,
I mean, he does in a way.
No. Culp definitely like lays into Columbo about, you haven't even fucking read his books or any of this other stuff to figure out if maybe there were people who wanted him dead. And, you know, and by that point, it's very obvious that to Columbo, he's like, you know, in his head, it's the matter. Like,
yeah, who cares?
That's a red herring. Your son did it. Like, it's obvious your son did it based on this. But there's that point where, like, Columbo's on the phone to verify with, like, one of the other officers the contents of Rusk's briefcase, you know, like, when the crime went down, basically about the airplane ticket, you know, thing. And it's just, like, there's all these little things where it's very, you know, it's clearly sort of laid out that, like, he, you know, these guys think that they have pulled everything over on him, but he is, you know, finding all the little holes. And also he just looks out the window and sees them like yucking it up and, you know, having a gas right after this kind of somber, serious moment with him, which is a big clue of like, oh, they're just dickheads.
And like Justin is like sort of miming as Columbo. And that's when he gets in the car and goes and does like a little Columbo impression, a decent Columbo impression.
Yeah. It's not a bad one, honestly.
No,
it certainly, you know, helps cement the fact that he is just a, you know, smug, you know, self-important prick. But
yeah, I think this might be, you know, this is kind of one of the last of the like not very well-known stars as the murderer, because like after this we've got George Hamilton.
My god,
the episode after that we've got Dabney Coleman.
Jesus.
You know, we've got Rip Torn coming up.
I know you said Rip Torn, but I did say
Rip Torn.
My brain's not gonna remember it, and then I'm gonna see him and then I'm gonna yell at my TV. And
and there's some great stuff coming. There's a couple like really bad episodes coming. I think maybe the single least Columbo episode of Columbo is still yet to come.
Sure. Well, see, you cannot tell me that is like you please don't tell me when it's the next one. Please don't. Sure. I just, you know, like at least have that fun to yourself of knowing that I'm just going to fucking step into it and fall into a pit.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But you know, I think that like the show at this point has kind of figured out what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little goofy, it's a little different, but like we're not going with the sexy sex of the first 80s.
Right. I'm so glad that's tapered off, cuz it just was not a good fit. And this is better, honestly. This was I think you're right in that like this is one of the better 90s, you know, slash late stage Columbos that we've seen so far. Arguably, you know, the best outside of, you know, me being a fan of Agenda for Murder.
Right, yes, exactly.
Right. Speaking of, did you want to talk about that link to Agenda?
Yes. So there is a link to Agenda for Murder. So at one point during the lecture.
Yeah, it's like the first part of it when they start asking him kind of questions about.
The nerdy fellow, he says to Columbo, have you ever fabricated evidence? Do police ever fabricate evidence? He says, well, some have, and you know, but. Yeah. And the guy says, well, have you ever fabricated evidence? And he says, well, there was one time that I was at a lawyer's office and the secretary was in the bathroom. And so I went into his office and tried to find a piece of gum so I could match the tooth mark to a bit of cheese.
Yep. And that is Agenda for Murder.
Agenda for Murder, which was also written by Jeffrey Bloom, who wrote this episode. Yep. Because I think if he mentions that, he gets paid a little more money. Because when you reference something else that you also wrote, you get paid more money. Writers love to do that.
Yeah, good on him for making that reference. And also, it fits really nicely. Especially, I do also appreciate that the student kind of, you know, and Columbo's like, well, I was trying to avoid the question. Basically,
yeah, the guy goes, like, that's not really what I asked. He goes, I know.
I just was trying to avoid the question, you know, and Columbo basically just kind of comes out and is like, there's very little I wouldn't do to, you know, solve a case.
Yeah, once he says, basically, as soon as I know, he gives them two main tips. which we actually see him
put to use,
displaying right. in this episode. And one is don't talk too much, mm-hmm. which seems ironic coming from Columbo. But what he means specifically is that when you know something, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, he means
until you need to say.
Yeah, he means don't let anybody know what you know. Just let them continue to spool it out in front of you, because eventually you'll find where it doesn't match. And then the other one's my favorite. He's like, "Be lucky." And I was like, "Yeah,
yeah, you gotta be lucky." Yeah. And that's definitely how he gets this one.
Yeah. I mean, well, because the accidental recording of it
yep.
is what leads him to sort of solve the tech piece of the puzzle.
Right. How could they have committed this murder if they were sitting up in the classroom?
And it's actually kind of nice, because it's not like, you know, there have been other episodes where I feel like the thing that drops in his lap, you know, is the Rosetta Stone for the case, but also it's like 60% of the case. And this is one of those where it's not that. Like, he's clearly sort of boxed it in, and he's just kind of on that last little part, and it is the thing that kind of gives him that final sort of push towards oh, okay, now I can wrap this
just basically
thing up.
Yeah, he needs to prove that it could be done,
right?
More than he necessarily needs to prove that they did it,
right?
Like, at that moment. So
right, and if because if he can prove that it can be done, then the fact that he knows they are so convinced of how much smarter they are than he is, that if he gives them a license plate number and a car description, you know, in the way that he did, that they will basically go and just put the gun where he needs it. And so that's exactly what he did. And
that's what they do.
Yeah. Which is honestly one of the things I really enjoyed in the sort of interaction in this one, was how much they thought they were the smartest guys in the room, and how clear it was that they were self-absorbed 20-something white guys, which is to say, you know, missing a lot of things that were right in front of them.
Yep. It's a great example of hubris. These guys,
college, yes. Yes, hubris is the perfect word.
It is Columbo, the Columbo version of How to Get Away with Murder. Long before, this is where Shonda Rhimes got the idea. That's not true.
No.
And please don't come after me, Shondaverse stands.
Right. Mac is just making a joke. He just not want mean any
heat.
Disrespect.
I don't want that heat. Yep. I really like this episode. I love it. And please talk to me about fashion, because I'm ready to wrap it up.
Oh, yeah. But. Well, I had to cut it all out and put it at the end of this. Give me a hot second while I... Sorry, I'm also leaning away from
up, the... Spool up the drives. Here we go. Get ready to make the jump to hyperspace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so... what I'll say overall is, you know, this is, again, 90s, but it's fascinating because you get a glimpse into sort of what preppy fashion and style was generally at the time. And Cooper's such a great initial example, because, you know, he's like this blonde, reasonably good looking dude, and he's driving, you know, what seems to be an expensive, you know, vehicle.
Yeah, he's got a little Zabka there.
Yeah, yeah.
A little
and
Billy
he,
Zabka
so
there.
He's wearing like, let me see. Yeah, so he's wearing like, he's got this big sort of chunky oversized shawl collar kind of cardigan. And it's got like one of those sort of like classic Ralph Lauren, you know, kind of polo vibes slash maybe the rugby line that doesn't exist anymore. But like this sort of Americana part to it. But it's like it's red, white, and blue. And it's in sort of like block coloring with some stripes, you know, like on the cuffs and things like that. But it's also got like cable knitting in it. And
it's sort of Tommy Hilfiger before Tommy Hilfiger.
Right. Which is, again, that kind of particular era of like Ralph Lauren designs. It's very noticeable as a thing that would be kind of a fashion point. And then like he's got like white shorts on. He's got like a polo shirt on under it that is like white with like a horizontal navy stripe on it. And then like his shorts have like two really kind of close in pleats on each side, and they're also like shock white shorts. Again, all these things that also, are very like Ivy League-ish.
They're also 90s short. They are short shorts.
They are real short, and also like they basically have kind of the structure where they sort of look like the Gurkha pant or trouser, which is like that kind of another name for it would be like the cross belt, where it's
we get a good, really good look at those shorts and also his inner thighs.
Yeah,
as he walks up there's like deliberate shot of just like his whole back scenario as he goes up the the stairs at the very beginning.
Yeah, they really want us to kind of take it all in, but also in fairness, it's like it's that, and then it's down to like he's wearing like Adidas Stan Smiths, which are like, you know, a sort of style staple that have been around forever. You know, they're like the Adidas that have like kind of the green like heel tab, and then they have I want to say they have like the green stripes on the side. Like it's definitely a, like, if you know the shoes, you know them. But yeah, it's just, it's kind of that classic sort of preppy vibe. And he has some other weird shit. Like there are scenes where they're like talking to Columbo outside, you know, on campus, and he's wearing like, where is it? He's got like this green sort of work shirt that's really more of like an outdoorsman fishing shirt. It's just, it's real weird, and it's like his collar is like half popped, and then when you see the back of it, it's got that sort of flapped sort of shoulder line, which is usually an indicator that there's like mesh underneath that, and the flap is to keep like rain from getting inside. Basically those things where it's like they ventilate in interesting ways, and then you have storage pockets. Like he's got really big oversized chest pockets on both sides of the placket on that shirt, and they have like covered, concealed, like snap fasteners. You can see it by, or I should say, on the Blu-rays, you can make out the detail of, you know, that in the fabric. So you can clearly see, like, oh, those are like concealed snaps. Like he wears another version of that shirt that looks like it's made out of silk at one point in blue. It's really super weird. And there is a point where he definitely is wearing like the self-belted kind of trousers that are like that Gurkha, like full but badly, which is kind of like the takeaway from fashions in this. And I know I've talked about this before, but like it's really noticeable in Justin and Cooper's garb is how oversized it all is. Like everything is too big.
It's all very poorly fitted.
Yeah, Justin's blazer that he wears all the time is this like slouchy, unconstructed. It looks like it's a melton wool, but it's not that heavy. Like it has that same kind of texture to the wool. I guess boiled wool is what you would say.
It's not what I would say, but it's what you might say.
Yeah. Well, I should say, well, other people would also say. But anyway, and it's like a burgundy, you know, and it's like, it's just too big for him. But he'd like wear that with like what looks like a plaid work shirt buttoned all the way up underneath it, or like these terrible paisley shirts he wears. And again, everything's like oversized, and their pants are really bad about that, where it's like just kind of sloppy and everywhere and room for days in them. Let me see if there's anything.
All right.
Yeah, like I know I made notes. I mentioned Justin's blazer. There are some other places. Sure. The obvious one is I have to talk about Culp stuff, because he fucking shows up and it's like, fuck the 90s. Robert Culp looks good. Mm-hmm. And could you see that the dinner jacket he was wearing is colored? It's not black?
No, I couldn't see that.
It is.
I'm not looking for it in the same way that you are.
It's like, it's a deep green. It is like a deep forest green. It is a shawl collar velvet tuxedo jacket. And his bow tie is also like is a matching green. And then he's got like the square shirt studs, you know, in his tuxedo shirt and kind of all that stuff. Like I was a little bummed to notice that the bow tie that he wears is one of those that like has the adjustable kind of hook and loop for length, because it's a pre-tied bow tie. Like that's a little bit of a bummer, but yeah, it's such a good, solid, sharp look. And even when we see him again in a different suit, he still looks good, even if it's an open double-breasted jacket that he's wearing. But yeah, Culp's tux is really great and is a wonderful juxtaposition to the frat party, which is tux on top and like freaking swim Bermuda trunks. Shorts. Yeah, Bermuda Bermuda shorts on the bottom. And it's just, oh, I hate it.
It's very bad.
Yeah.
All right. I want to wrap this up because I made a promise to myself we would never have an episode that was longer than an hour.
Oh, sorry, man.
We are dangerously close.
Yeah. I feel like we've ruined that before, but sure. That's really the...
We've been close. We don't think we've ever actually gone over an hour yet. But I like this episode. I would say go for it.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, see some late stage Columbo, but... I think that's gonna do it for this episode, Benjamin.
Yeah, I don't have anything else. All right. Culp was the big one.
Culp's the big one.
Yep.
He absolutely is. That's gonna do it for Columbo Oilies. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah?
Don't toy with me, Justin. Not you. Of all people.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.